You're listening to Strictly Business Podcast with Lindsay Williams.
It's Monday, so it's time, as always, for Shapiro World. David Shapiro is from Sasfin Securities in Johannesburg, and we have a good old chinwag every single Monday. And today, David, it's a quiet one, and I'll give a backdrop to this. First of all, I think there might be a few British people that may not have drifted into work today after the 4-day weekend because of the Queen's Platinum Jubilee celebrations. It's just a mere speculation. I can't verify that. But the other thing is the Pentecost celebrations in certain European countries would have also withdrawn liquidity from the market. So that and the fact that it's the coming towards the end of the first week of June in the Northern Hemisphere. I think it must have been a quiet one. Was that has that been verified by JSE activity?
Yeah. I'm still interested. We're below 10 billion as we talk. Yeah. There's still another hour's trading, and generally in the last few minutes a lot of the funds you get balancing of funds and you get about a third of the volume goes through right at the end. But it has, Lindsay, for the last couple of days while the UK was on holiday. Volumes here were really bad. But I've got to add another thing.
Yes.
There's nothing to get us into this market. There's absolutely no incentive to buy this market. And I think even from a selling point of view, I think most of the market has sold. Those who wanted to get out have sold. So you're finding it kind of drifting. And today, for example, because of the China story, more news of them opening up, US markets are also firmer for whatever reason. I can't find a strong, reason for them to bounce. I don't know what's come out there that has got the market steady, and especially after the news that we've got last week. But whatever the reason is, there's no interest in this market. There's nothing to get your teeth into to get excited about as well. We keep getting streams and streams of bad news. And, even sitting here yesterday watching the tennis, watching the Jubilee and that, in between that, I would read The Economist and Financial Times and going on to Bloomberg's, I get the newsletters. Everything is just bearish. There's nothing there other than negative news about how everybody feels.
But it works both ways, David. It works both ways. If there's a bull market, it needs constantly to be fed.
Yes.
It goes from, for example, 80 to 100. I'm just using numbers, and you think, okay, this is great. We're in a bull market now. But unless you feed it, unless you give it what it wants, give it what it craves, then it starts to get a little bit bored.
Yeah.
It's a corporate story or an economic story. And the same with the bear market. You've got to come up with something really, really new now to get this thing down. We know interest rates are going up. We know inflation is rising. We know that crude oil is horrifically high. We know that household expenses are higher than they've been in a couple of decades at least. But what's the next thing that makes you want to sell? There's no reason, in my opinion, to sell at the moment, although that would be my preference. But there's certainly no reason to buy.
No reason to buy. And I think one factor that is holding buyers back is that you're now coming out with strategists. I don't know what to term them anymore. Economists, analysts, and so on, who say, well, even though corporate earnings are looking good historically and the guidance is better, wait until the Fed starts raising aggressively, earnings will come down. Therefore, we expect the markets to, just grind along now. But when the next set of earnings come through, it will give it another knock. So you say, okay, I'll hold back. I'm not going to do anything. Let me watch. Friday's number, we're expecting another bad inflation reading. Whoever's, it could be 8.1, 8.2, 8.3. I'm not quite sure. So against that backdrop, there's no reason to commit fresh money to this market at all. On the other hand, I suppose if you're not out, I don't know what's going to get you out. Most of those people who wanted to sell, I think, have already taken action. And if they didn't, if they've been bearish and they haven't taken action, now I'm not quite sure what the next move is. But I think every bear is trying to, or every house, investment house, is trying to outbear the next one. Everyone's coming out with similar kind of stories with a different angle. So and corporate leaders as well, from Tesla, from Elon Musk. You know, we had Jamie Dimon. You've got who else is there? From Lloyd Blankfein, the new president of the Goldman Sachs. I'm trying to think some of the articles I read. Who else have I missed? Oh, BlackRock.
Yes.
You know, inflation's going to be with us a long time. So eventually you're so worn out and beaten up, you just say, well, okay, I'm not going to do anything. I'll just keep reading and see what happens and wait for things to change. So it's very difficult to get anything going in this market.
Okay, well, we'll talk about the market a little bit more, yeah. But just as an interlude here, before I get onto three companies, notably Alexander Forbes, MultiChoice and Hulamin, we'll talk about those in a moment. Something just come up on my screen. I don't know if you saw this. Have you ever flown Ryanair when you've been in Europe?
I saw this article. No, I haven't.
Michael O'Leary is a reprehensible character, in my opinion.
Yeah.
It's like going on a cattle truck. I've never been on a Ryanair flight because I've heard so many bad things about them.
Yeah.
EasyJet, yeah, maybe I would. But did you see that thing about having to take a test?
I know. It is absolutely insane. And one of the reasons is that these are people who are catching the aircraft from a flight from Europe, somewhere in Europe, back to the UK. And the problem is that, and this is not uncommon, that a lot of the passports, if it's a South African passport, there's a big fear that it's been stolen or it's not a, what do you call it? It's a fake passport.
Yeah.
And therefore you're gaining entry into the UK for whatever reason. But you need a visa for the UK, Lindsay, and that's what bothers me. I mean, I can't just get on a flight today without a visa.
No.
So I'm not quite sure what the backdrop to that is. These people might have visas, but they wouldn't have been issued visas without the proper checks. So it's all very peculiar. Maybe these people are on a visa. You know, they do have those visas, 2-year visas, but then. You know, there again, I'm not quite sure. So the worry is that people are using fake passports to get in the UK. So they've given them this Afrikaans test.
Yeah, this is what this says. Let me just paint the picture here. This was a Reuters article that I'm reading, but I'm sure it's been covered on many other news platforms. It says here, Ryanair is requiring South African passengers to prove their nationality before travelling by completing a test in Afrikaans, a language used by just 12% of the population that has long been identified with apartheid and the white minority. Europe's largest airline by passenger numbers and worst airline by every other measure, which does not operate flights to and from South Africa, said it required any UK-bound passengers from the country to fill in the simple questionnaire due to what it described as a high prevalence of fraudulent South African passports. What if you're a black South African or a white South African that doesn't know Afrikaans? I mean, this is the obvious question.
Well, I would be in that situation because there's certain words that I would not pick up. I'd probably get through it. I mean, but I looked at some of the which is the highest mountain in South Africa?
Goodness,
which is the highest mountain?
Somewhere in the Drakensberg, I would
imagine. Know you could say that. That you could say, which is the highest mountain range.
Well, see if I can get any of these answers.
Yeah, but I mean, to say which is the highest mountain, I'm saying, I don't know what you're talking about. Not the Drakensberg. The Drakensberg stretches from, from Mpumalanga, from the eastern part of the country, right?
Yeah, but
right,
it's a mountain range, so there must be one
peak. It's a range, so I don't know what the answer is. I don't know what the highest mountain is.
Okay, give me another question. Give me another question.
I don't know what other
one. Oh, you haven't got it in front of you?
No, I haven't got it in front. I just remember seeing that, and quite honestly, I mean, it's just an insane and insulting and offensive.
It's a disgrace. Michael O'Leary. Disgrace. I mean, you just got to boycott this airline. I'm sorry. Thank goodness they don't fly to and from South Africa, otherwise I'd be in trouble. But anyway, Michael O'Leary.
But most of us, we haven't. I could get through Afrikaans and that, but I couldn't conduct a perfect conversation in Afrikaans. You know, just for whatever reason, I think that, just to assume that everybody knows Afrikaans, it's just crazy.
It is.
And,
As he's quite saying, insulting. Okay, Alexander Forbes, financial services company, came out with its results, and after 15 minutes of trading this morning, it was down nearly 5%. David, is this one that you've tracked? Is this one that you prefer not,
really.
Not to? What? Nah.
Yeah, I know they're trying to, get this company to where it was a few years ago and that, but I haven't really followed it for some time. You know, there's nothing in it that attracts me. You know, when we look at financial services, I don't want to go off at a tangent for the reason, but there's got to be something that gets you in. I could look at a Capitec, I could look at very closely at something like Capitec because it's touched the low end of the market and there's growth in it, in what they're doing and where they're heading. You know, I could look at some of the fintech companies or like mobile companies like MTN or Vodacom in terms of what they're going to offer in financial services. But, the banks, I think we fall back on the banks if we're a bit bored. We don't know what else to buy. We say, oh, safety in banks. And there's not much else. But I haven't really looked at Alexander Forbes.
Okay. In that case, no. Need to say any more. Move on to MultiChoice. They came out with a trading statement at 2:10 South African time, and share price. Last time I looked, it was down just over 2%. What's happened to Canal Plus? Still a lurking buyer? Do you think? Do you think they're still lurking in the shadows?
I think they're trying. I think conditions are very difficult for MultiChoice. I think competition, I think costs. It's kind of been a disappointment, but I don't think so. I think the business model has been very difficult, but they aren't, they're facing an enormous amount of pressure from places like Disney Plus, from Netflix, even though they do go into partnership with them. Eventually, the partners are going to say, well, we don't really need you. And so unless they get local content is the only way in which they can draw or keep their viewers. And that would apply in every country. If they're in Nigeria or any other country, they've got to do local Nigerian content and so on. So it's not an easy model. I know that they're quite innovative in terms of trying to get packages to get people in. We overestimate the sport, because once talking to the CEO, he said to me, he says, Premier League soccer is only played on the weekend.
That's not true, but anyway, yeah.
Well, what I'm trying to say is it's played for an hour and a half, for example, or 2 hours, let's say, the game.
Yeah.
And you've got a few games on Saturday and you've got a few games there. But for the rest of the day, you've got nothing to draw people in. So he was saying it's very difficult to rely only on that, even though people will pay quite a lot to have it. Yeah. So I don't think it's the money spinner that we think it is, but still I'm glad that they've got it. That they don't let it go.
Yeah, I remember when I was in South Africa. I remember when Gary Bailey used to, and what was his name?
Gary Bailey.
And the other chap, Payne. What was his name?
Terry Payne.
Yeah, is he dead now?
No, I'm sure he's still around.
We still just haven't heard from him. But anyway, you used to have Payne and Bailey there, and it was great. It had more live English football games than British television had, and it was absolutely fantastic. It was a complete lifeline for me. I loved it, but clearly not quite
as
popular.
You are never starved of football here, never. You know what I'm saying? Whichever league you like, whether it's Italian, whether it's German, whether it's Spanish, whatever it is, and even on a Saturday or whenever the league's playing, you can get virtually every game. So one thing there and credit to Premier League for pushing it out, for making it available.
Okay,
but they've been okay. It's been all right, MultiChoice. I don't know. It's there's a lot of work there still to be done. A lot of issues. I've got to go through this in greater detail. It's only their trading statement, but one's got to look a little closer at it.
Hulamin, withdrawal of cautionary announcement. What the cautionary was pertaining to, nobody seems to know. Well, a lot of people do know, but they won't tell. They're too close to it. Share price has fallen 25%. That's quite a lot.
That is. It's come down on the termination of this deal. I don't know what the terms of the deal were, but obviously, this has been going on for some time, and it makes sense. I mean, this is not a bad business. The dynamics keep changing all the time because they have to buy the aluminium. They then process it and then sell it, and I think so they buy it in rands, I'm talking in a foreign currency, and they sell it in a foreign currency. So there's always the mismatch, and it's been since it was unbundled from Tongaat, it's never quite got the attracted the imagination or got the rating that it needed. It's been a very difficult business. So Hulamin, at one stage these shares, and I'm looking here on the 20th of In the depths of the pandemic, the shares were trading at 86 cents a share.
Okay.
And that continued for a good few months. So you were looking at a market cap of about half or about a third of where it is even at these levels. So it was trading in 200-300 million. And, I mean, for that kind of business, the factory, the operation, I mean, it was an absolute giveaway. So it was bound to attract some kind of corporate – not radar, but some corporate activity. Yes. And this, it did. I think the announcement of this pending deal came through about 6 months ago, more. I think in October. And that's it shot up. That's when it shot up. And then it's kind of moved up higher, from then, and it's come all the way back now.
So where is it now? Just give us the context, because you said 86 cents, bumbling along, deal was mooted, cautionary announcement
now about
shooting up.
Where is it now? Yeah. It's about 355. Let me give you the latest price. It's trading 364 from 500 overnight, 497.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. If you look back at 86, if you'd gone away for a while, hadn't seen a newspaper, came back, you'd bought it at 86 and now it's 360 or something, that's still a pretty good return.
Oh, no, of course it is. It was a giveaway. There were so many businesses there that were being thrown away in 2020, even early 2021. So I've no doubt that down the line someone's going to come and have a look at this again. And especially with aluminium, which is aluminium products are tin cans. Not tin cans. How's that for a stupid remark?
No, but it's a tin can doesn't mean it's made of tin. We know what you mean.
Yeah, I know. But I mean, aluminium demand has been pretty good. And for cans, as consumption picks up and people get back and back to their normal lives. But I don't know. It appears to be a very, very difficult business.
Certainly does. Okay, one thing we haven't spoken about, which happened on Friday, and I didn't do any interviews on Friday, so I haven't gone through it. And we don't need to go through it. But your reaction to the U.S. jobs number, because I don't know about you. I thought these numbers were really good. The U.S. economy, when it's almost at full employment, created 390,000 new jobs. The unemployment rate, 3.6%. And the wages up 5.2% year-on-year. So you're creating jobs, and people that are in jobs are earning more. But they're not earning as much as inflation. But certainly 5.2% is better than 2.5%, which it was a couple of years ago. I thought the numbers were great.
They're very good, and admittedly, the amount of new jobs being created is slowing down, but it's still above expectations. I think this is where the dilemma is, and I'm when you go through all your reading on that, the concern is the level of inflation, and what will be needed to get the level of inflation down. In other words, knocking demand, and in order to do that, you've got to get people back on the dole. Out of jobs, not into jobs. I mean, I'm trying to put it as crudely as I can, but that's really the thinking. And you're saying, hold on a sec, the U.S. economy, or Powell, did everything in his power to get all those people who were laid off during the pandemic to get back into their jobs. Now you're saying, now that you're back in the jobs, we've got to get you out of jobs again, because we did it too quickly. Inflation is taking over. We've got to stamp down on inflation. So those 11 million people who are out of jobs, or whatever the number is, well, we've got to get that you know, we've got to get a lot of you, you know, back on the street corners or whatever they do in America, back in lines, claiming unemployment. And that's an irony. And so there is an underlying strength in the U.S. economy, but everybody's advising that you need at least 4% unemployment now, 3.6. So you need that even 5% unemployment if you want to get on top of inflation, and you need interest rates a lot higher. I think the numbers 4 and 4 that I've been reading, 4% unemployment and 4% Fed rate. So we're far from both of those.
So one's got to come down, the other one's got to go up. So
exactly.
it's very
together,
simple. And maybe maybe in a couple of years' time, they'll both meet in the middle at 3.5 to 4%, something like that. Yeah. I think it will, but there'll be many bumps on the road to that conversion, or rather that convergence. That's the word I was looking for.
But that's why nobody wants to play this market. No one wants to do anything, Bruce. You say, okay, if that's the general message, and this is coming out from some very powerful voices, you're going to say, well, I'll just hold on. I've got my savings. Corporate, we saved a lot. We're not under the stress that we were in 2007 and 2008. Yeah, we'll just bumble along and see what happens.
Anyway, nonetheless, today, David.
Good markets, yeah.
Nonetheless, a solidish day. Resources doing well. Industrials also. Financials not so well. Down 1.25% as we speak, and the all share in the top 40 both up. Let's call it about 1/3%. What we need to talk about now is football, because I was. No, we have to. You see, the thing is that I'm getting a little bit pissed off with the UEFA and FIFA and other authorities, and also the TV companies and the clubs themselves, getting their pound of flesh, because they've only just finished the season, and you've got something called the UEFA Nations League, where all the top players from Europe are playing in this European tournament. They've only just stopped the season. They need a bit of a break. They need to go on holiday with their wives and children, or partners and children, whatever it is. And they've been forced to play these games and travel all over Europe. England were in Hungary the other day, getting booed. And they've only just finished the Premier League. And then what happens is that they're bringing the season forward in the UK. They start on August the 6th, I think it is. So that sooner have they got home from these international commitments than they have to go into pre-season training, and they have a series of friendlies, and then they start again. And then after that, what have we got? November, the end of November, the World Cup in Qatar, the cup in the desert with searing heat. I think it's wrong. I think it's too much football. I mean, too much football, that's the first. Too much of it.
It is too much. And no matter how fit these chaps are, no matter, everybody needs a break, because the pace of Premier League football now, or even international, is at such a level that I don't think you can cruise your way through it. You have to be fit. And you take knocks, and those knocks have to repair. And I don't care whether you're 20 or 21, etc. It does take its toll, and you can see it in the injuries in clubs with smaller squads. They just can't, you know, get through the season. So it is a worry, you know, that it just becomes a little too much, especially now in the heat. Now everybody does want to take it, and it was a hard season. You know, it was a hard season for every one of those footballers, particularly in the Liverpool squad, in the Man City squad. They were playing, I don't know how many games they played this season, but
in the 60s, I would have thought.
It must be 60s.
Yeah, exactly.
That's crazy.
It's too much.
And you can see the knocks they take. You know, you can see studs up and or studs sideways, and you can see the hammering they take and so on. And then it costs teams. You know, you get chaps out for the season sideline. Anyway, I'm with you.
Yeah.
I don't know whether you've been watching, but
I have been watching.
I don't know how serious it is. I don't know. Yeah. Oh, okay.
No, I have been watching, of course. Come on. No. It's like a moth to a flame when it comes to football and me. But anyway, I think that the authorities should sit down with the clubs and the individual countries' authorities and say, listen, UEFA Nations League, no, please, no. No more of this rubbish. Yeah. Anyway, David, anything else you'd like to add? Any reading over the weekend before we go?
I'm trying to work out. I've got quite a few presentations to do. And the difficulty is to try and get a coherent message that you can give to people, to investors. But to go through all of what I read, it's very difficult to come out and say, well, this is going to be a great message. No, it isn't. I think you've just got to keep people advised where we are. For me, the message now is just hold back, just wait. There's no rush. There's no need to get into anything. You don't have to sell at these levels. But I'm very reluctant to be dragged in until the talk slows down, until we find something that can give us a bit of – hope is not the word I want to use, but just a bit of confidence.
Okay.
Nonetheless.
Okay. We'll end the conversation on that fine word, confidence. David Shapiro is from Sasfin Securities in Johannesburg, and that was Shapiro World. The views and opinions expressed in these podcasts are those of Lindsay Williams and various contributors and do not reflect the policy, position, or opinion of any other agency, organization, employer, or company associated with strictlybusinesspodcast.com. Assumptions made on the analyses are not reflective of the position of any other entity other than the speaker or the author. And since we are critically thinking human beings, these views are always subject to change, revision, and rethinking at any time. Please do not hold us to them in perpetuity.